It was 64 years ago this Tuesday, July 26th, 1952, Eva Peron died. She was only 33 years old. And yet in her short 33 years, she accomplished so much and she left an incredible legacy. Eva Peron became the most famous and well-paid radio personality in Argentina in the 1940s. In the end, she married Juan Perón and helped him win the presidency. And as First Lady, she would fight for women's suffrage. She would help women obtain the vote. And in this incredibly Latin, male-dominated culture, she would become the first woman to get out and to campaign and to open the door for thousands of women to go into politics. She would start the Eva Peron Foundation. And this foundation would give away millions and millions to the incredible poor in Argentina. I mean, we're talking about 400,000 pairs of shoes a year, 500,000 sewing machines a year, 200,000 cooking pots a year. The need was so enormous. No, in the end, because of the way she cared for the poor, she would be named spiritual leader of Argentina. And when she died, she'd be given a state funeral that was usually reserved for the presidents. She was an amazing lady who had such an impact on the culture and the psyche of Argentina. So that 50 years after her death, in 2002, they opened a huge museum in Buenos Aires to Eva Peron. 60 years after her death, just 4 years ago, they were unveiling huge murals on buildings. It's the Public Department of Health building, a huge mural of Eva Peron, and they put her likeness on their coinage. So here it is, 60 years later, and her spirit still has an impact and is remembered there in Argentina. It was Tim Rice, the great British playwright, the composer. Tim Rice, when he was growing up as a boy, collected stamps. And one of his favorite stamps was of Eva Peron. He knew nothing about her, but he liked the way the stamp looked. It wasn't until 1973 that Tim Rice was running late for dinner one night, there in London, driving. He flipped on the radio and heard the end of a program about Eva Peron. And he suddenly thought, that's fascinating. So he started doing additional research to learn about Eva. And he was then so intrigued that he flew to Buenos Aires, Argentina, to continue his research. And after finally continuing the research there, he came back home and called his friend Andrew Lloyd Webber and said, I got us a new musical. And so they went to work. It was 1978. That Evita debuted on West End in London. And that year it would win the award for Best Musical. It would be 1979, it would debut on Broadway. And that year they would win a Tony, the first British musical to win a Tony for Best Musical. It wouldn't be until 1996 that the movie would debut with Antonio Banderas as well as Madonna. And again, they would win an Academy Award for Best Musical. Evita, this musical, has had such an impact because I believe it speaks to the human condition. It speaks to the struggles that we all face. I decided I wanted to do some research on Evita myself, knowing that, you know, whenever you see a movie, whenever you see a play, you know that sometimes a few liberties are being taken. Sometimes I get accused of that as a pastor. the liberties are taken. And so I thought, you know, I need to dig a little deeper to see what do I really believe about Eva Peron. What I found out was, well, you know, she really was a politician, a public figure. And if you're a politician, then you're always going to have those who despise you, those who dislike you. And so they will lie about you. They will twist everything you do. They call into question your motivation. And then there's always those on the other side who love you, who like what you do, and so they make you out to be a saint. I think we're kind of seeing that in America right now in our own politics. It's the nature of how it happens, and usually I believe the truth is somewhere in between. And so I begin to look for Eva Peron. What I discovered about her, well, there's no question she was born in abject poverty in rural Argentina. She grew up in a family of five children. She was the youngest. Her father left the family when she was 1 year old. She was stuck in one of these situations where there was no hope of ever getting out of your poverty, this little town that she lived in. But she never gave up hope. No, she wanted to be an actress. And so we know that when she was 15 years old, she managed to leave this little rural town and go to Buenos Aires, which was like Paris of South America. Now, what we are told, one of the stories is, as we heard in the song earlier, it was she had a relationship with a married man who took her from there to Buenos Aires. And as soon as she got there, she dumped him and went on her way. Other historians say, no, that's not what happened. It was her mother who took her to Buenos Aires in order to live with relatives. What is true? We do not know. All we know for sure is she left this rural town in poverty and did go to Buenos Aires at 15. And at 15, she became a model and then an actress. And again, it is said she had a number of relationships with men who would open a door for her, and when she moved up the ladder, she left them and moved to the next. There probably is some truth to that. But at a very young age, she became an incredibly successful radio personality. She became the highest paid radio personality in Argentina in the 1940s. She was making such good money that she was able to have her own place. She had some wealth. She began to have great fame across her country. But the fascinating thing is it seems to be this period in her life where she remembers where she came from. She remembers the poor. In fact, she helps to organize all of these people who work on the radio into a union and is elected the first president, a woman in this male-dominated culture. She becomes the president of this union to fight for their rights. And she begins to care about the poor. They're known as the shirtless ones. And it's in 1944 that we know there is an earthquake in San Juan, Argentina, and a colonel in the army wants to have a fundraiser in order to raise money to help all these victims, and she's asked to participate. The colonel happens to be Juan Perón. And that's where Juan and Eva first meet. They begin a relationship, and in 1945, they get married. She's 24, he's 48. She is so well known and she's so popular with the masses, she's despised by the wealthy and the powerful, but she goes out and begins to help politic for him. Women did not do that in Argentina. This was a whole new thing. She went out and began to politic and got the masses to vote for him, and Juan Perón easily won. And so now she becomes First Lady of Argentina. And as First Lady of Argentina, we know that she has a great interest in the women's suffrage, getting them the right, working in the foundation. She's doing all of these things. And what you see when she is First Lady is she starts to go through this transition. That's the fascinating part. As I begin to look at her life, at this point in her life, she struggles. She struggles with the age-old question, where do I find meaning and joy? Will it be out of the wealth and the fame and the power that I sought? where do I find meaning and joy? And secondly, am I worthy to be loved? And I believe those two questions go to the heart of the human condition for us all. For all of us struggle with, where do I find a sense of meaning in my life? How do I find the joy that I'm looking for? Am I lovable? Am I worthy of love? When I begin to see these two themes developing in Eva Peron's life, I couldn't help but think of this scripture. This scripture, when Jesus says, "There is the Master who calls his servants before him, and to the servants on his right hand he says, 'Enter into the joy of your Lord.' For when I was hungry, you fed me, and when I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me in. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison and sick, you visited me." And they said, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger? When did we see you naked or in prison or sick?" And Jesus said, "When you do it to the least of these, you do it to me." Now, you may not realize it, but this passage in Matthew 25 drives so many Protestant theologians crazy. It makes them very uncomfortable. Because in this passage, we are told, how do you find the joy of the Lord? It's about what you do. Did you feed the hungry and give water to the thirsty? Did you show kindness to the stranger? And there is no mention of, did you believe the right things? Did you have the right doctrine? Did you have the right dogma? There's no mention of believing the right things. It's all about, did you do this? Now, as Protestants, the foundation for us with Martin Luther is God's grace is free. You do nothing to earn it. God's grace is free for each of us. God loves us not because of what you do, but because God chooses to love you. But what I hope we understand is, it is when you and I choose to love and do that it tends to open our hearts to experience the love that God has already been offering us. It's not that you earned it, but sometimes we don't feel very lovable and we're not experiencing it. It's so often when you do things that you open your heart to experience the love that God is already offering to you. And when you know that love, it is so much easier to turn around and to bless the least of these, to bless life, to be those who show love. This morning, we're going to start this new sermon series, St. Luke's on Broadway. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about it. This is our third year to do this. And the whole idea came about because of 3 years ago when we were celebrating our 125th anniversary birthday. As we were celebrating, we said, you know, we started on the first Sunday after the land run, 1889. And our first place to meet was 3rd and Broadway. It was there on Broadway that we proclaimed God's grace and our values of faith. And then we got to thinking, you know, here at St. Luke's, we love the arts. We love beautiful music. We love beauty. We wind up loving the theater. And we thought, why not look at some of the great shows that are on Broadway that address the human condition and help us deal with our faith? And so that's what we've been doing. This is our third year now. And this year we start with the show Evita. And I think we need to look at two fundamental questions. First of all, the question is, where do you find meaning in life? What do you do to enter into the joy of your Master? There is such a temptation to think it is going to be the accumulation of wealth and power and fame or all these other things. It's really about self versus serve. For Eva Peron, she grew up in such poverty. It's because her father left when she was 1 year old that the family was doing okay. He took care of them. But when he left, they lost it all. And they were in such poverty. Now, if you're in poverty, what is it that you want? You want what you don't have. You want money. You want some wealth. You want power because you feel trapped. And I have no doubt that Eva Peron used people in order to get that. But I also know, so do we. It is such a temptation for us all to use others to get what we want because we feel like it's how we're going to be happy. It happens all around us. Sometime in our life, we've all done it. To use others to get what we think we need and want in order to be happy. But Eva Peron, even though I believe she did that to start, I think once she started to have it, she realized it wasn't the answer. And so she remembers where she came from and starts to see the poor, the shirtless ones, and she wants to do something. And when she becomes first lady, she really can do something. And so she establishes this foundation. Now understand, in those days in Argentina, they had a foundation to help the poor in the country. It was run by the wealthy, the elite, the upper class. And it was always the wife of the president who ran the foundation. But when Eva Peron came along, they looked at her and said, "You're not educated, you've been poor, you're an actress." They wanted nothing to do with her. So what did Eva do? She started her own foundation, the Eva Peron Foundation, and that's where the money flowed, and suddenly millions was coming in. I told you about the shoes and the sewing machines and the pots, but they also built hospitals, they built homes, they wound up having scholarships for kids to go to college. She believed in education, and as she worked at this more and more, she became more and more passionate. Soon, it's all she was doing, 15 to 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. Her husband was saying, "Please stop." But she had developed this passion. She became so angry at poverty and feeling we've got to do something to help these people. One of the other characters in the play is a guy named Shay. If you've seen the movie or you've seen the play, you know, Shay is kind of the Greek chorus. He's not a historical character. No, he's a person who just kind of shows up and kind of tells you what's going on in the scenes or what Eve is thinking or others are thinking. He's kind of a foil to her. Well, when Tim Rice created this character Shay in the movie or in the play, he based it on an actually historical character, Shay Guevara. Some of you will recognize the name, Shay Guevara. He was a counter-revolutionary in the 50s and 60s. You would recognize his picture. He's on all kinds of protest flags and posters. It turned out that he, too, is from Argentina. Though Eva and Shay did not know one another, he was 10 years younger. And like Eva, he looked around and he saw the poverty, the hunger going on in Argentina. And he wanted to help, and so he became a physician. And after he became a doctor and was taking care of all these the poor and the sick, it made him even madder, and he believed capitalism was causing the problem. And so the answer was to create revolution. And so he got involved in revolution there in South America and Latin America. He met the Castro brothers in Mexico City. He went to Cuba and helped to overthrow the government and establish Fidel Castro. He did not do it for materialistic gain. It was a moral imperative to help the poor. A good end. But he became so dogmatic that if you did not agree with him, then he had you executed, assassinated, established the revolutions, if you stood in the way of helping the poor. Somehow he got the idea that the end justified the means. It was not that way for Eva Peron. It was not that way for Jesus. Jesus told us, "When you do it unto the least of these, you do it unto me." It's where you find the joy of your master. But Jesus never formed armies. He never had people assassinated. He never tried to overthrow the government. No, he wanted to change people's hearts and call us to love. That's how he wanted to do it. He had the right end, but that determined the means. Now, I have to tell you right now, as a country, you and I in the next months are going to be in a debate. Our country is going to be debating very important issues like immigration from the South, immigration from across the ocean. We'll be talking about people of other religions and what restrictions should be put on them. We will be talking about violence in our country, poverty. We'll be talking about racism. All very real issues. And how do we stay secure? And how do we deal with these issues? And we all have an end of wanting to be safe and secure and things to be good for all. And the question will be, what are the means that we are willing to embrace? And I hope that you will be praying that your faith will inform the things that you believe are the appropriate means to reach the ends. Our faith should inform the things we embrace. Some of you will recognize the name Mandy Patinkin. Mandy Patinkin, you might know him because he performed out here at OCCC about a month ago. But he's also on the show Homeland, which is a very successful show, sixth season on Showtime. And he plays the ex-CIA director. And his business is to fight terrorism to keep us all safe. And he talks about how much he has learned because of the role he's been playing, the people he got to meet with in the United States and around the world. But what really is fascinating is back in 1979, Mandy Patinkin played the part of Shay in the musical Evita when it opened on Broadway. And so that's what he did. He's always been a humanitarian, caring about people. He was talking about a year ago with our Syrian refugee crisis. He was over in Europe filming, and he decided he wanted to go to Greece and see for himself what was going on. He went to the island of Lesbos, and there he was as these boats were coming ashore with these Syrian refugees. And he said when they landed on the shore, he said, here came this mother and father. Each were carrying a little boy. He said, I couldn't tell if they were alive or dead. You could tell they were just so wet and so worn, and they'd made it to shore. And he said, when I looked at them, I didn't see strangers to be feared. I saw my own family. He said, I remembered my grandfather Max, who had to flee Germany because he was Jewish when the Nazis were in power. I thought of my grandmother, Masha. Masha had to leave Russia because of the pogroms by the Russians. I saw them flee, and I saw these people fleeing. And he said to the mother, why are you doing this? And she said, all I see behind me is death. All I see in front of me is life. We must try. They'd landed on the beach. They'd lost their papers, their money. They had relatives living in Germany. He said, it's ironical. My family had to flee Germany for safety. Now refugees were going to Germany for safety. He said they needed money and papers, and he managed to get the papers and the money so they could move on to a place of safety. He talked about how that experience had such an impact on him, and I just want to read you what he had to say. I've pretty much met everyone in the national security system, not only in this country, but other countries. I've been briefed far more than I ever wanted to be, and I've heard more information than I ever needed to hear. And what I've learned is how extraordinary our security systems are in America. We must keep up our defenses to the highest degree imaginable. It is essential for all of us all over the world. But along with that, we must keep our humanity as well. Because if we don't keep our humanity, there will be nothing left to defend. The extraordinary people I met, the selfless rescue workers, the Syrian families seeking refuge, the people of Lesbos, they have opened their homes to those experiencing this enormous suffering, they have taught me that the only way to build peace is to connect. We must build relationships, get to know one another as children, open our arms rather than close our hearts. We must open our arms rather than close our hearts. Now, I got to tell you, I don't have all the answers for us as a country, and I can't affect what happens to us in a country, but I can affect what happens in Oklahoma City. You and I can. It's why we have 4 after-school programs where hundreds of children every day are experiencing open arms and open hearts. A word of encouragement, a word of love, an opening of a door. That's how you and I build a better world. One at a time, in our own world, our sphere of influence, it's what we do as a church. And it's why we have these programs all over the city so that you and I, we can open our arms and our hearts and we make a difference in a child's life. Jesus said, "You want to know joy in your master? Then you feed the hungry. You give water to the thirsty. You show kindness to the stranger. It's when you do it to the least of these, you do it unto me." For Eva Peron, she discovered that the wealth and the fame and the power she sought left her empty. And there was something more. Something more that began to give meaning and joy to her life, even though it called her to work so hard. And it's how she left this incredible legacy and affected so many lives. But secondly, I believe one of the reasons that you and I struggle with not being lovable or acceptable, one of the reasons we go for wealth and fame and power, looking for our meaning, is because we do feel so unlovable and unacceptable. We forget that we are loved by God, not because of what we do, but because of who you are. Jesus said, "Those who are helping and those who need help, the rich and the poor, the powerful and the powerless, all can know the joy of their master." God's love and grace is for us all. But how often you and I struggle in our lives wondering, am I good enough for God? Am I lovable to God? Am I lovable to anybody? For Eva Peron, her father left when she was 1 year old. When your father leaves you when you're a child, you grow up feeling rejected. Is it my fault? Am I good enough? But you know, the other fascinating thing is, in Argentina, in that day, it turned out her father and her mother were not married. Her father was married to another woman and had another family. It was not uncommon for wealthy ranchers in Argentina to have multiple families, but be married to one. And he was married, and so he left this other family that he had been providing for to go be with his wife and other family. And because of that, though, on her birth certificate, it was listed that she was born illegitimate. And if you were listed as illegitimate, then that affected your rights as a person in Argentina. So she lived with that stigma all of her life, not being good enough, being illegitimate. And when she became First Lady, she attacked that. She attacked that law and got it changed so that if a child was born to a mother and a father who were not married, it would be listed on the birth certificate, not illegitimate, but as natural child. And their rights were restored to be like all other children because she knew what it felt like to somehow never be good enough. Something's wrong with me. Am I lovable? When she fell in love with Juan Perón, as I say, she was incredibly helpful to his campaign. The masses followed her. She was famous. She was popular. She helped him get elected. And so she knew that he needed her. And then she got cancer. And as she got cancer and grew weaker and weaker, she could not help him. She didn't make a difference for him anymore. He did not have real value. She did not have value for him. And she began to wonder, will he still love me? So Tim Rice wrote that song that we heard just a little earlier to address this issue. And it really is kind of a play on words because it begins with a question of a statement of, you must love me. You must love me. It's a cry. It's a prayer. It's a hope. Will you still love me even though I can't help you anymore? I am of no value to you anymore. You must love me. But what Eva Perón discovers is Juan does not leave her. He loves her. And even though she is sick, he is there to care for her, to make sure she is provided for. He is there to sacrifice and suffer with her. And so the song turns on the words to where it now says, you must love me. You must love me. An awareness that I am loved. Not because of what I do for you, but because you choose to care for me. She grows in what it means to be loved. For us as Christians, you and I come with the understanding that in spite of what we have done, in spite of our backgrounds that we may not control, we are lovable to God. It's why we come to worship and grow still and each week after the world has attacked us to remember you're lovable. You are lovable. You are loved by God. And when you know that you are loved by God, it opens your heart to want to love, to take care of the least of these. Eva Perón, she found herself. That's what I like about the story. I think she found herself. From a person who started off thinking, I got to have wealth and power and fame, she discovered that the meaning in life would come from helping the shirtless ones, giving her life to try to bless the poor. She found meaning and joy. And what she would discover as her life would go on is she was lovable to her husband Juan Perón, to the people of Argentina, to God. She was lovable. She died when she was 33 years old. That night, they embalmed her body with a special doctor who had the process of coming and embalming her body in such a way that it would stay looking just the same for years and years, decades, kind of like they did to Lenin. For the next 3 years, Eva Perón was to lie in state, and she did. But then there was a military coup, for which Argentina seems to be famous, who overthrew the Perón government, and Juan Perón and his people had to flee to Spain. And Eva Perón's body disappeared. The new military dictatorship said, you may not have a picture of Eva Perón in your possession. You may not mention her name. Because they knew the spirit that she kindled in people, you couldn't mention her name. You could have no picture of her. The military coup went for 17 years before they were overthrown and democratic elections were reestablished. And with a democratic election, Juan Perón was elected president for the third time. And it was then that they found where Eva Perón was. She was in Milan, Italy. There she was entombed under the name Maria Maggie. That's where she had been for 17 years. So her body was brought back to Argentina to be laid to rest in the tomb for her there in Buenos Aires. Her spirit still was affecting Argentina. She may have been gone to Italy for some, she still had a hold on their soul, affecting who they were. So that 60 years after her death, they're still unveiling all of these wonderful paintings and coinage No, she's still a part of that culture because of the spirit that she brought. It was the taxi cab drivers, the union, the workers, the shirtless ones, who actually got the plaque and put it on her tomb that said, "Don't cry for me, Argentina. I'm never far away." It's in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Let each of us lift up our own silent prayer.